It's a cold and frosty Thursday morning in London. I'm Gab and he's Jules, and it's the Gab and Jules Show. We have a lot to get into, including people at Inter and Juve misbehaving in epic magic of the FA Cup tie between Spurs and Everton. But let's start at the top, because let's start with Barcelona, beaten last night by Sevilla, 2-0. It's only the first leg. They can still fix it. My man Lopetegui, and I don't like Lopetegui as a person because of what happened before, but I'm finding it increasingly difficult to dislike him.
Yeah.
Umtiti, a bit of a disaster.
All right, come on.
At the back. It's not just...
Yeah.
Let's bring Rodri Fáez, because he's across all this.
Yes.
Rodri, it's not just Umtiti, right? That's wrong with Barcelona?
Well, not just Umtiti, but, you know, the whole thing right now at the moment. But the thing is that everyone in Spain is liking of Umtiti, because everyone thinks that he's a retired player. He was so selfish before going to the World Cup that he didn't get injured to try to fix his knee. But, you know, everyone is talking about Umtiti, about the midfield, and mostly about the defense.
Well, let me help you. France has won two World Cups, one of them with Umtiti, and Catalonia have won exactly zero.
Zero.
Let me move on to this, though, because this is the real story at the top, which I think is hilarious. When you want to kind of distract from bad things, you bring in other stories, right? It's the oldest trick in the world.
Yeah.
So I'm going to reconstruct this quickly and let you guys put the context. France Football, the venerable magazine in France, they put out the story. And on the front page, they put Lionel Messi, of course, is out of contract in the summer. They put him in a Paris Saint-Germain shirt.
Indeed.
This creates a very angry reaction from the Barcelona media.
Yeah.
First of all, Jules, the story. Did they have any new revelation?
Nothing.
Or was it just like a case study on how it might happen?
Yeah, exactly. It was a case of Neymar is pushing, you know, trying to convince Messi to come to Paris, pushing it at the club. Then the club is trying to figure out a way financially of signing Messi and make it work. And that's everything that we've already all written. They wrote. But I guess the front page was more provocative in the sense because he has a PSG shirt with a photo montage than anything else.
Okay, now, Rodri, and maybe it's also the fact that France Football gives out the Ballon d'Or, so people think that it's perhaps a far more important and prestigious publication than it really is. But, Rodri, what is the reaction in Catalonia? One, when they see that this magazine that gives out the Ballon d'Or, often to Messi, puts a picture of Messi in a Paris Saint-Germain shirt. I bet they took it very well.
They are angry. They're angry and they're fed up with French press in general, mostly with PSG, because they consider that the strategy of PSG is completely opposite than Man City's, for example, because they think and they know that Man City's interest is still on Leo Messi, and they're saying nothing instead of PSG. PSG is saying that Neymar is speaking out about Messi, Di Maria is speaking out about Messi, Pochettino is talking about Messi, Leonardo speaking about Messi, and now the press around PSG is speaking about Messi. So that's why Barcelona is fed up and angry. I mean, they're mad right now at PSG.
Come on, give me a break. Pochettino is asked the question. He's an Argentine himself. You know, he's honest, and I thought he's been quite cautious and careful about, you know, but Messi, he right now plays for another club, etc., etc. Pep Guardiola is not asked the question. Sergio Aguero is not asked the question because he never plays. Whereas Angel Di Maria and Leandro Paredes are asked the question, they answer, right, of course we would like to play with him, it would be great. Leonardo is asked the question because he actually gives interview, not like Chiqui Begaristain. And that's what they're saying. What are they going to answer? No, we don't want him.
No,
he's ugly.
No.
And
Rodri?
Rubbish. And he's like, he's old.
I remember you that Neymar said that next year he has to play with Messi. And I remember you that Di Maria said last week that they're very close to play with Messi. It's different than saying that they want Messi to be on PSG. I mean, they did it for sure for next season.
Well, Di Maria is out of contract in the summer. So if he wants to play for Messi, he's got to find somebody to give him a new contract. But what I find interesting in this, just as a neutral party in this, is that somebody put out a picture of 55 front pages of Neymar in Barcelona colors being linked back in the two main Catalan papers, Sport and El Mundo Deportivo. But they did it with Coutinho as well. You remember when
course.
He was at Liverpool?
That's what they do.
This whole idea, I mean, this isn't new. This is what Barcelona, and not just them, Real Madrid too, to be fair, and other big clubs have done for a long time, Rodri, right? It's part of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's why, for example, in Madrid, they laugh at Barca, like saying, okay, now you're complaining about PSG and the press around the PSG, but you're making the same, you know, with all the players for the past 4-3 years. So, I mean, that's why in Madrid is something really funny with Barca.
Of course. And then Ronald Koeman goes like, oh, he's disrespectful. He's in under- what did you do last summer? You talked about Memphis Depay every single day when you were dreaming about Memphis Depay. You were getting up at breakfast. You were talking about Memphis Depay. You were going to bed. You were talking about Memphis Depay. Come on.
And Rudy Garcia pointed it out to him.
Anyway, Jules, you have to look to Manchester. I mean, they're making the same, the PSG, the same movements last summer, this year as well. But they're making like more discreetly, more secretly on the way that, you know, PSG making an opposite strategy completely. I mean, like, okay, we're going to say to all the world that Messi wants to come to PSG. Okay, well, what about Man City? That's why, for example, Barca is complaining about PSG and not complaining on Man City's strategy.
This is a bit different, though, because Messi is out of contract.
He's on the market right now. He's on the market.
So whether it's Manchester City or Paris Saint-Germain, they don't need to speak to Barcelona to get Messi. The only people they need to speak to are Messi and Messi's dad, right? So maybe Pep Guardiola is Zooming with Messi every day. We don't know, and nobody talks about it, right? I mean, this is the difference that we're talking about here. Right, Rodri?
Yeah, sure. That's what I mean. I'm pretty sure that Guardiola is speaking to Leo Messi for the past 2 years to try to convince him to go to Man City. I'm pretty sure about that. But the thing is that, or the thing that Barca is complaining about is the public scenario. You know, okay, PSG is saying about Messi every single week for the past 2 months. But instead of Man City, we just shut up and completely working in silence.
Like, we all kind of laughed at this demented reaction from the Catalan media, it's an offense and blah, blah, blah. Have Barcelona as a club, though, they've had the good graces of not really saying anything, have they?
As a reaction, you mean?
Institutionally, yeah.
Well, Joan Laporta, who's nothing right now at Barcelona, but he's a candidate for the presidency, has said it's disrespectful back in January. We had Ronald Koeman.
It was back in January, but I'm saying a reaction to this headline, right?
No. Only Ronald Koeman saying, oh, again, they talk about it. And what we mentioned earlier, I'm not sure Ronald Koeman is in the best position right now to give lessons to people after what he did with Memphis Depay and Lyon. And as you said, Rudy Garcia reminded everyone on Tuesday saying, I'm sorry, but, you know, Ronald Koeman is not really well-placed to talk about this when he did far worse with Memphis Depay, when Memphis Depay, unlike Lionel Messi, was not on the market at all. He still had a year on his contract. Not like Messi, who right now can sign a pre-contract with everybody he wants. PSG, Man City, Inter Miami, whoever he wants. So it's a very different context as well than back in the summer for what Koeman did to Memphis Depay with Memphis Depay and Lyon.
Okay. It did also, like, Rodri, let's be fair on this Depay thing. Jules is bent out of shape, as his friend Rudy Garcia.
But
equally, given that there was a global pandemic and given that Memphis Depay's contract was expiring, if somebody shows up, gives you some money and takes Memphis Depay away, Leon would have been happy, right?
Yeah, but it's more the fact that Koeman every day talked about Depay and now he's saying, don't talk about players.
That is a good point. Rodri, we don't know what's going to happen. I like my own view is that I think if Messi gets a move, he's going to have to take an enormous pay cut.
Yeah, of course.
Because despite what people say, oh, the petrodollars, blah, 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 it's really, really difficult for Paris Saint-Germain and for Manchester City to afford him. I want to throw something out there because I believe in the romantic solution. Do you think there is any chance whatsoever? And I know some might say the romantic solution is him staying at the Camp Nou. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. We'll get to that scenario. Any love at all for my scenario, which is a two-part.
It's not the one with where him and Cristiano play together, no?
Yes. It's the one where Cristiano cancels the last year of his contract and he and Cristiano play together at the end of their careers, which I think would be cool. No, and then the other one where he goes back to Newell's Old Boys. And maybe Bielsa comes too. Like, is there any sense of this? Because, look, we're not professional footballers, Rodri. But if you achieve everything that he's achieved, everything Cristiano's achieved, that sense at the end is like, hey, man, what if I go back home and I do it there? And maybe I do it for free or for not a lot of money. Am I just being stupid bringing this up? But tell me, I won't bring it up again, Roger.
Well, I mean, it's not something it's stupid because Messi always said, you know, that it's a desire for him to go back to Argentina. But I find it very, very difficult in terms that before that he has to play maybe in Barcelona, PSG, or Man City, then moving to MLS, to the USA, because I mean, this is something that he really wants to, and after that he would go back to Argentina. I mean, I don't really see, because terms of sporting terms and mostly personal terms, I don't see Leo Messi and his family going back to Argentina. It's not really secure for them. So that, you know, it's really something romantic. It would be great for him, but I don't really see it.
All right. So so basically, it's also maybe it's too soon in his career as well, because he is 33 years old.
Can you imagine if I think he still feels that he can probably play in Europe. That's why you would want to stay here, right? If you feel that you can still.
I think at the highest, you know, it's funny. Let me plug my own piece on the website about this. I have a piece up about the fact that there's so many old players scoring a ton of goals.
Yeah, but because they play in Italy,
around Europe.
Right.
No, actually, it's not funny. They don't all play there. Actually, six of the top 10 in Spain actually happened to be in their 30s, including my man, El Comandante Morales. Jamie Vardy hadn't gotten injured. Maybe he'd be top of the league in terms of goals here in England. And, and he's 34 years old. So don't you walk there. But yeah, you have Joaquin and all these guys. Anyway, the sense, though, is that Paris Saint-Germain or Manchester City. But, Rodri, I get the feeling... I mean, for me, I still think the most logical thing is, if I were Lionel Messi, what I would do is I would go to the three guys who are running for president, Laporta, Font, and the one whose name I can never remember and who's not going to win anyway.
Yeah.
And I would say, listen, I control the future. You guys are up Spit Creek without a paddle. I'm willing to take a pay cut.
Even if he stays, he has to take a pay cut.
Of course. Take a big pay cut. I'm willing to, you know, unofficially back you. I want this, this, and that, and I do it for the good of Barcelona, and so on. And I would try to cut a deal with the three newcomers, with the three candidates. And surely any one of these guys would say, okay, Leo, yeah, because you taking a 50% pay cut would immediately make you look good, and it would make us look good. Isn't this the most logical scenario? Rather than Lionel Messi getting up, going to Paris where he plays against a bunch of no-marks, no disrespect, most weeks, or going to Manchester City, it's not just the weather. You go to City, it's a team that's already working and they're outstanding without you. What are you going to do, right? Isn't this the most logical thing? Rodri?
It would be, but Barca right now is struggling with money. I mean, with economical issues and financial issues. And, you know, if I were Laporta, which is going to be the next president of Barca, I would say, okay, if I get Leo Messi to stay here, I mean, how much would it cost for Barca? It would be, I mean, very, very expensive. And I agree that Barca could get any credit line, you know, in the next months, but it would be really, really tough for them because, I mean, they are in a season which is called transition season. So, okay, you're going to make Messi to stay, which is going to be like this in terms of financial.
No, but this issues. Is the thing. It won't be.
Why?
It won't be. It won't be because, and again, maybe I'm being romantic here, right? I see no reason why Lionel Messi, having earned 130 million or 120 million a year for the last 4 years, he does not seem to be somebody who's particularly motivated by money, incidentally. Yeah. Not a lot of bling around Messi. Look at his clothes. Looks like he buys them online. You know, he could easily go for his own image, for his own legacy of the future. He says, hey, Joan, if he's going to be the next president, you say, I'm going to sign a new contract for $10 million a year. I'm going to take a 90% pay cut, okay?
No way. You're automatically saving.
That's a bit generous.
But you know what? We're putting a value on one season or two seasons of this in exchange for something that is much more valuable, in exchange for something that allows him to help name the new manager, gives him influence over the club, cements his legacy at the club in a bigger way. And that's going to be much more valuable, even in purely economic terms, let alone emotional terms. That's going to be much more valuable for Messi in the future going forward than going to Paris Saint-Germain, where, by the way, we all agree he's going to take a pay cut for the money he's on now anyway.
Yeah,
or Manchester City, same thing.
But I don't see it that because, I mean, he wants to win a Champions League trophy before retiring. So if you play for free for Barca, do you think Barca is gonna try to make something interesting for Messi to try to win a new Champions League trophy before he retires? I mean, it's nothing impossible, because even if he stays for free, Barca has to sell some players. So, I mean, it's not going to be this strong Barca anymore, at least in the next 3 years.
That's a good point. And he could move just to another club, whether that's PSG, Man City, anywhere else.
I'm going to come out and say it. Anybody can do what they want, right? Anybody can do whatever they want. Maybe I'm deluded here. But after 20 years at this club, if you winning one more Champions League title is more important to you than the survival and the well-being of your club, then I kind of have a problem with it.
If he leaves, they're still surviving. They're actually welcome.
I don't know what he believes. I keep getting told what Messi believes.
No, I know.
It makes him seem very selfish.
Messi has been sustaining Barca in the past 5 years. I mean, that's why Messi is going to say, okay, am I an NGO for Barca? I mean, because, you know, 5 years since the last time they won the last Champions League trophy, I mean, it's all about Messi. Messi trying to take Barca on his back. I mean, all the way. And, you know, is he going to do it, like, you know, another year? No. Without the big project he wants and he deserves?
He's had the big project. I mean, he had Guardiola for 5 years.
Yeah, but it's true. The last few years have been more difficult than anything. You know, maybe he's not enjoying it.
Just more cynical.
You know, my romantic scenario is that he goes to MLS, to Inter Miami, wins MLS.
With Phil Neville.
Neville. He doesn't need a manager anyway. He can win it by himself. Then he wins.
A better scenario would be Phil Neville replaced by Tracy Neville in mid-season, and then the Messi-Tracy Neville partnership.
But then he wins the CONCACAF Champions League, right?
Uh-huh.
Then he goes to Newell's Old Boys. He wins the Copa Libertadores. So he becomes the first player ever to win all the Champions League he hasn't won in Asia. But
What about Esperance? He can go to Esperance Tunis and win the...
Or Al-Hali. They can be in Cairo. He wins that as well. He wins all the Champions League.
Why not Zamalek? Why do you have against Zamalek?
Well, Zamalek, if he wants to. He wins the Club World Cup with another club than Barcelona. And then his legacy is the good forever.
I don't know if you're saying this to mock me, but yeah, these would all... let me put it this way. These would all be much cooler, more interesting things to do than to join Paris Saint-Germain. By the way, let's be realistic. The only way you're joining Paris Saint-Germain is if Neymar or Mbappe aren't there. There's no way the numbers stack up.
We don't know. We do know.
They can try. Or going to Manchester City, who, frankly, the way they're going...
But maybe he should go to Man City, because, I mean, it's something that he really likes to be coached by Guardiola once again. I mean, he should go to Man City. It's the easiest way.
You can understand that maybe he wants to go in a team that is playing great, with a great manager, not having, like, Ronald Koeman, and playing with Mingesa and Junior Firpo every weekend.
All right, let's show some love to the team that beat Barcelona, because I touched upon this before. I wasn't sold on Sevilla and whatever, but most weeks they play really, really well. Jules, I know you just want to talk about Jules Koundé, but there's much more to Sevilla than that, right?
Force me too, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Sevilla is Monchi, you know, he's a sporting director, which is the best guy in the world.
Can I stop you? Having seen Monchi work up close, Monchi's also made a ton of mistakes. I don't think it's just Monchi. Yeah, I think you have to give credit to Julen Lopetegui.
Yeah.
And to the players who are there as well.
He's a nice coach, but for me, he's not the main one. He's part of the base of Seville, but he's not the main guy. I mean, the main guy for me is Monchi, which is the one that try to fix everything with the players, trying to convince Monchi to make some things improve, which is Monchi, because he's kind of because Lopetegui is kind of a stubborn with some things. So that's why Monchi for me is the base. Monchi, Navas, and Koundé. For me, those three guys are the three guys that are making Seville one of the top 10 teams in the world.
And by the way, they're doing this while Rakitic, I know, obviously last night he was all right. Rakitic is kind of dragging them down to the bottom, right?
Yes, but no.
And whose idea was it to bring Rakitic back?
It was Rakitic's idea, because, you know, once Barella was going away, you know, Rakitic was offering himself for the past 2 years to Monchi, like, okay, I want to go back because my wife is from Seville and she's kind of tired of Barcelona. Please let me go back.
Go play for Levante then, okay?
Yeah, but finally Monchi said, okay, but I don't have Banega anymore. Okay, Rakitic could be great if he makes like a pay cut quite high. And Rakitic did it. So that's why Rakitic went back. I mean, he's not the best transfer in the world.
He's not,
but it's something
good.
Necessary for Barca in terms of experience, you know?
When was the last time that the two best teams in Spain were neither Barcelona or Real Madrid? Like it is right now, because the two best teams right now.
Actually, that's a good question, Roddy. Are we prepared to say we agree Atleti is one of the top two teams in Spain, obviously, right?
And the other one is
Sevilla. Are we prepared to say that it's Sevilla?
100%.
For me, yeah.
Come on. And Jules Koundé is the best defender in La Liga this season.
Yeah, I agree
Thank
with you.
You.
He's the best. No, and even I say even more. For me, Jules Koundé is the best defender in the world at the moment. In the world. Everyone was talking about Diego Carlos last season. I said, Koundé is the best one. Not Diego Carlos, please. Koundé. Try to look on Koundé. And Koundé was...
Yeah.
I mean, he's proving that. He's the best defender in the world right
22.
Now at the moment.
Can you imagine? 22, and he's playing at that kind of level right now?
I'm going to leave you with this, Rodri. And you can tell me a yes or no, right? We talked about Lionel Messi being out of contract and where can he go and whatever he wants. It's a romantic in me. How awesome would it be if next year in the Champions League with Lopetegui and Koundé, they sell Diego Carlos for a lot of money and they get Sergio Ramos comes home to the place where it all started and he wins the Champions League with Sevilla.
It would be great. I agree with that. It would be great, but it's something which is not going to happen. And it's not going to happen.
Rodri, thank you so much.
Thank you to you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Jules, we often mock the FA Cup. I often mock
you
the
do,
FA Cup.
You do, you do.
Because
yeah, that's true.
Not because I don't like the competition, not because I'm a snob about it, but because of the way people lay it on so thick. Oh, the magic of the cup. And like the way like some lower division team or some non-league team goes and plays, and like the only way they can present it, it's like, oh, look, Joe Bloggs, who was on the bench 7 years ago when Tranmere lost to Middlesbrough.
You don't like the nostalgia?
No.
You don't like the nostalgia of going this big upset from 20 years ago?
I like it when there's a big upset. I like it when there's a rip-roaring game. I don't like all this laying it on thick and whatever. I don't like the fact that it's interferes with my Premier League weekend. I don't like it.
I know that.
Once it advances, though, they take it out of the weekend and then they put it in midweek, or at least certainly this season they have. But all that said, we had a tremendous FA Cup time. And you knew it was going to be a decent storyline because it was Jose Mourinho against Carlo Ancelotti.
Yeah.
Frenemies. I remember when Jose first came to Italy, he started like taking pot shots at Carlo, trying to wind him up.
Yeah.
You know? And Carlo was just like, meh.
Quickly, Jose understood there was no point there.
And then they became friends and they're still rivals. In the end, it was a tremendous game. 5-4. I mean, tremendous. Obviously, there were mistakes, but that's what makes it, you know, seesawing. You enjoyed that, yeah?
Oh, very much so. Attacking football, really. Like you said, mistakes.
And attacking football from Spurs. I mean, let's be fair to Jose, right?
Yeah,
because
it deserves.
We give him a hard time. He goes out there. He leaves Harry Kane on the bench because they're playing City at the weekend. He's not 100% fine, but Kane came on and scored.
Yeah.
But, you know, Lucas Moura, Lamela, Bergwijn, Son, it's a front four, plus Ndombele.
Yeah.
They went for it. Plus Doherty, who, the more I watch him, I say, are you really a right back? You're more of a wing back or a, you know, whatever.
Played really high. Yeah, for sure. And I think it's not often you score 4 goals away from home, even in the FA Cup. it's a shame that you score four and still lose in the end, and certainly they won't be happy with the defending and the five goals conceded, and it could have been more. They could have scored more probably as well. It was just an end-to-end game, and I don't know if it's Jose saying, like, look, I can also play without parking the bus, and I can also try to play more expensive even without Harry Kane. Although after that game and the five goals conceded, maybe he was thinking, you know, it's not a good idea. Maybe let's go back to what we know best.
You're suggesting he wanted to show, oh, look, this doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, look, I can try, but no, it's not in my DNA, really. But what I thought Everton were brilliant. I thought Gylfi Sigurdsson, and I think we need to talk about him a little bit because he was not really in Carlos' plans at the start of the season. He was on the bench.
No, and I think he still isn't everybody's fit.
But he's played, but he's played really well when called upon. When, you know, there's a hat-trick of assists in that game yesterday, which was brilliant. The one on for Bernan is a fantastic little dink with his left foot.
Oh, it's tremendous.
It's tremendous. And I think I like the fact that Carlos still managed, as he's always doing, because he's so good at man management, but to, you know, to keep Gylfi Sigurdsson focused even when he was not playing, and then once he brought him in to play, whether it's a bit deeper or a bit higher up on the pitch, often Sigurdsson delivers. So I thought that was very positive as well to see him in that kind of...
And I know what you liked at the end was Carlo with his cup of tea and coffee, huh?
This is the coolest celebration you would ever seen from a manager. I mean, we know that Carlo is the coolest manager in the Premier League, right? You agree?
I think for a night out, yeah, there's nobody better. I mean, Mourinho, if he's in a good mood, you go out on a night out with him, that'd be all right. But yeah, other than that, if you want to have like an actual night out of fun, you know, people you want to talk football with, sure. But you know, that there's no question about that. Do you want to give us a reenactment?
For the people who haven't seen it, so it's 4-4, it's an extra time. It looks freezing. At Goodison Park, and trust me, I was in Liverpool on Sunday, and it was the afternoon, and it was already freezing. So I can just imagine on Wednesday night, late, at Goodison Park, and Carlo Ancelotti has his really boiling tea in his hand. You could see it with him. Bernard scores, and everybody goes mad on the bench, and Carlo Ancelotti just goes on his tea because it's too hot to drink. But then he warms his hand up and he can't really celebrate because he's got the boiling tea in his hand. He just blows on it. It's like a superhero in a movie. You know, everything explodes around him and he just goes off.
Like, I think ultimately he was an element. I know this wasn't the vibe you wanted to give, but the way I read it, he's like, been there, done that.
Yeah,
nobody in the history of the game has won more Champions League titles than I have. So let's just be cool
about
it.
It's so cool.
Act like you've been there before. Yeah. That's the secret.
Exactly. Gab, where do you think Carlo can take them this season? I mean, they're seventh with two games in hand. They can go third if they win those two games, one of them being against Manchester City, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
I don't know, and then they will have the derby against Liverpool coming up, a Liverpool team in crisis, so it could maybe finally be a win for Everton in the Merseyside derby. But they made great progress already, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, look, when he took over and I saw the moves they made in the summer, as you know, I was skeptical and I got some stick. Now, I mean, not because I'm skeptical about Carlo, obviously, but because, you know, Alan was coming off a poor season, great player, but, you know, and he'd had his injuries and he'd had his issues, and of course he's injured now again. I really like the Doucouré signing. James, we have no idea how much he's actually costing and he had the wages and whatever. And also, you know, you're talking about a guy who hardly played the last year, right? Mm. I looked at it and I thought, okay, well, who's the reserve striker if Dominic Calvert-Lewin, something happens to him? You know, I mean, Tosin wasn't going to write home about him. And I also had an issue, like, longer term, what are you going to do? Because, you know, you've got these older players there. But I think Carlo worked his part where, you know, there's good spirit in the squad. He lets players express themselves, puts them in situations where they can make their talent, you know, be the difference.
Yeah.
And you just saw the impact that Doucouré and Alan, when he was fit, had on that midfield. And I think that's really been the driving force, along with, obviously, the development of Calvert-Lewin. Mm. Michael Keane is a better defender, I think, today than he was.
I think individually he's improved a lot of those players already. He's only been there a year and 2 months. He arrived in December last year, so...
And I think, look, it's... I mean, people have different personalities, right? Different ways of working. I struggle to think of two people who are more different on paper than Carlo and Big Duncan Ferguson.
Yeah.
Now, for those who don't know, Duncan Ferguson is this cult figure in Scottish football and at Everton and at Newcastle, of course, as well. who, you know, there's the anecdote about him because he's like 8 feet tall. But
he's a striker.
He's a legitimately tough guy.
Yeah.
And there's a story about the sort of burglars breaking into his house and Duncan Ferguson on his own subdues both of them and calls the police and fixes himself a drink, you know, while doing so. Like that.
Exactly.
And it's a true story. Like, honestly, I would take, in a street fight, I would take Duncan Ferguson probably over any footballer I've seen in the last 30 years. And that includes Roy Keane, by the way.
Yeah, I think so.
But, you know, they're very, very different, right? But Carlo makes it work because Carlo makes it work.
But he makes it work with everyone.
Exactly. With everybody, right?
Every player, every profile, everything.
I think the gap in resources, and I think financial fair play will return at some point. They're going to have to make some big choices. I know there's a new stadium, but, you know, who knows when that's going to be ready? Who knows when that's going to be producing serious money? So in terms of the club automatically, you know, plus Carlo's not getting any younger. He's going to be 61 this year. Yeah. But in the immediate, if the idea was to bring some luster back, some sense of what this team can do, make players better, I think he's been a resounding success.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think a top six finish would be fantastic already in terms of improvement, in terms of moving forward. You could see that you're actually improving and going forward is very positive. And I think working even longer with this squad of players, assuming they don't lose El Calvert-Lewin, for example, or they don't lose a Ducouré in the summer, if they can keep all those big assets that they have, I'm sure it can even take them a bit higher. I'm not sure if they can break the top four because, as you said, I think the gap is still quite high. And I'm not sure they'll be able to spend 120 million every summer like they have for the last two summers.
No, they won't be able to.
So,
and this players, I think a lot of these guys are getting a little bit older as well.
Yeah.
You know, that was always kind of the trade-off is, you know, Carlo's here because he wants to be here. He wants to try something different, try to build something rather than go into a squad that's already there and challenging for the title. That's great, but you got to push the kids. And when I saw those signings, I'm like, well, you're not really pushing the kids. I know they have some young players, you know, who've come through the academy there and stuff. But, you know, so far, so good. And you mentioned, Sigurdsson before? That's a good example of what he does, right?
Yeah.
So Sigurdsson is a player who can do certain things really, really well and other things not so well.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts Sigurdsson in a position where, hey, on paper, it's difficult for a team to carry Sigurdsson and James, right? That's why they haven't played together that often.
True.
If everybody's fit, they wouldn't both be playing. But you can see in a game like last night where, okay, well, Spurs are going to play that front four. That means there's going to be, you know, less people in midfield. That means I can put Sigurdsson in those situations where he can hurt you in the transitions and make his passing hurt you. As for Spurs, though, they've got City this weekend. More heartache, or?
I don't know. I find it hard to see where they can. I don't think they can reproduce right now what they did in the first game in London when they won 2-0. Remember, with like 20% of the ball, two shots on target. I think it's a completely different Manchester City side. It's a very different Tottenham side as well. Of course, Son and Kane can score against anyone and can cause you trouble against anyone. But I just think the momentum that City have right now compared to the Spurs momentum, which is non-existent, I find it hard to find a way for Mourinho to go there and win. Maybe they can draw if they defend really well, but I don't even think right now they defend well anyway. There was a time this season where they're defending well because they were defending so deep, and Højbjerg and Sissoko were really strong in front of that back four. I'm not sure Højbjerg is that strong anymore. He looks tired to me.
Yeah, Højbjerg's running himself into the ground
completely
a little bit. But I want to ask you about Ndombele as well, because we saw him playing deeper in this game.
Yeah.
What was the thinking there?
I don't know. There's a few games now where he played deeper. And I guess in terms of ball retention, it makes sense. But then you lose him so much in the final third.
You lose the driving force and you're creating
a
natural gap
deep
between the midfield and the attack, which isn't great.
Which is not what you want. And certainly, as much as he's improved physically to last 90 minutes or so, I still don't think that in a deeper position, he can fight and run and recover the ball and play forward for 90 minutes. I just don't think he's got the stamina. So I find it a bit hard to understand really why he's there. But maybe it's because Sissoko, we know, criticised Mourinho after the Fulham game. I don't think Jose liked that, benched him. And I don't think Winks is good enough. And so maybe then Ndombele is the only option really you have alongside Højbjerg if you don't play Sissoko and you don't really trust Winks, which seems to be the case.
Final point on Gareth Bale, because, okay, it's not news. He makes a ton of money. He's there. He's not playing, whatever. Mourinho rarely says things in public that are accidental, right? There's usually a point to it. Mm. He explained that Gareth Bale said he didn't feel great. He said, you know, Bale wanted to go do a scan. There's a big difference between saying, oh, Gareth Bale wasn't fit.
Yeah.
Right?
Why did you expose him like
but
this?
But what he said, is he kind of laying the groundwork for, like, packing him up and sending him back to Madrid?
Surely. But because otherwise, why would you say it? Why would you say the truth? Why would you say, this is what Gareth said? And clearly, the way you're saying it, you don't think it's true.
Yeah, it's an odd thing to say, though, now in early February, when you know you can't get rid of the guy for another 4 months.
Yeah.
So, you know, are you appealing to his pride? I don't know. But
surely not by shaming him like or trying to shame him. I don't think Gareth Bale is very much fazed anyway, because there was the comment that he made after the game against Chelsea, when Alisson Bender, a former colleague from ESPN, said to him, "Oh, why didn't you bring Bale?" And he goes, "Oh, it's a good question, but you don't deserve the answer." What kind of answer is that to start with?
Yeah, we didn't get a chance to hammer him from that, but yeah, that was way out of line.
That was weird. The clash that they had at training when he says to Bale, what do you want? You want to go back to Madrid and never play football again? And he's like, again, why this up? Why did you talk to him like this? And okay, maybe Jose really believed and now he's disappointed that Gareth Bale has never really hit the ground running properly and maybe doesn't think that Bale makes the effort or enough effort. Or I don't know. There could be a lot of reasons. But I just don't, for me, the way he's managing the situation and managing Gareth Bale is so wrong on many respects.
It's certainly an odd way, I think, to handle things.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
All right, enough of that. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Inter and Juventus draw 0-0 in their Coppa Italia return leg, and Andrea Pirlo's side advance to the final. 2-1 on aggregate, Jules. Did they deserve it?
Right, you might disagree, but over the two legs, and especially our second leg, where I never really thought that Juve played, I really thought they were there to defend that 2-1 lead, and maybe that's what you do, and maybe Pirlo has turned a little bit into Max Allegri again, as we mentioned, after the weekend.
Pirlo said, oh, I'll take it as a compliment.
Yeah, well, do it, but that's not really what you were signed for originally, but I guess you have to evolve as well as a young manager. I just think I thought Inter were the better side in that second leg. They could easily have won it and qualified. I can see the frustration on Conte's and the players' face. And good for Juve. If they go and win the Coppa d'Italia and it's Pirlo's first trophy in his first season, good for them. I'm just still not really convinced by what's happening there.
I don't have a problem if somebody changes around at this stage in a second leg semi-final, though it is a bit of a concern that over the three games that they played against Inter, the two Coppa Italia games that are in the league, Inter, I thought, pretty much dominated
Gab, we saw also a serious incident in that game between Antonio Conte and Juventus executive Andrea Agnelli as well during the match. What happened there?
All right, so here's a little bit like that classic Japanese tale Rashomon, where different people give different versions.
Yeah.
And everybody's really concerned about what we know for sure is that there was a back and forth continually going on between Antonio Conte and, you said, Fabio Paratici, Juventus's sort of de facto sporting director, and Andrea Agnelli, the Juventus president. At one point, at some point, Antonio Conte, when he's going into the tunnel, he gives the middle finger salute. He also said a bad word, and I still can't figure out what it is. I tried to imagine.
But you could see it clearly. You could see it.
Well, no, it's not that. I think it might have been in Puglian dialect, because I don't want to get into it. There's different versions of it. I'm like, that's not that bad that you can't actually print it. Whatever. Agnelli, especially, Agnelli, that to me is the biggest concern, because he didn't take it well. He sort of stormed down the stands, shouting at him, totally out of control.
Yeah.
Look, part of me says, I love the WWE aspect of this. I don't necessarily find either character particularly likable. But you have an institutional role if you're Andrea Agnelli. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to hold a team president who is also a member of the UEFA Executive Committee, mm-hmm. who is also the head of the European Clubs Association. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm going to hold them to a higher standard than Antonio Conte, who is basically an out-of-control shouting manager.
We know it. That's what he does.
And so I think they both let themselves down. There may be an investigation. There's this whole like cloak and dagger stuff with TV pictures, TV evidence. What do they actually say? Honestly, they should both come out. They should both apologize in public to Italian football as a whole, because this is pretty much unedifying. And I know we had Lukaku and Ibrahimovic. Those guys are players in the middle of a game. Yeah. You're an executive.
Yeah, okay? That's different.
Move on. Be bigger than that. You may wonder why this world this comes from, and obviously there is a lot of bad blood between there. Not so much with Antonio, going back to when Antonio Conte walked out on Juventus after winning 3 straight titles, and then later, if you remember, there was a suggestion about him coming back to Juve. He and Paratici supposedly remained close, and then that was vetoed. Some people speculate that's behind it, but whatever it is, I mean, Conte is a Juve legend and will always be a Juve guy, no matter how many, no matter what he does at Inter. So it's really jarring and a really bad look that this is out there. Now, it takes them 120 minutes, but Manchester United eventually beat West Ham to advance. Jules, what did we learn other than the fact that without Pogba and Bruno Fernandes, they're not going to be breaking anybody down?
Nothing else. It was so dull. I was like, just do something else, please. I mean, you've got Alex Telles on the left. Okay, he can't defend. But certainly in terms of crossing the ball, quality of crosses, he can bring you something. He was never in a good position.
Donny van de Beek didn't carpe diem, did he?
No, but again, people going, like, oh, look at van de Beek. But in a team like that, with no structure around him, what do you want him to do? Yeah. All I wanted, I'm going to tell you, all I wanted was Ahmad Traoré to come on at some point.
Or even Ahmad Diallo, as he's now known.
Or Ahmad Diallo, yeah. To come on and just like brighten the game. And just like take the ball and dribble past 2 or 3 people. I don't care that he's so young. And that he's only played with the reserve team or the under 18 or whatever, but it was just like, come on. And then McTominay scores, and I guess you take the
I'm not going to blame Solskjaer for prioritizing the league.
No, of course not. However, just this could be the scenario that you see in the league and that we've seen already in the league, where they can't break down anyone, even sometimes when Bruno is on the pitch.
Yeah.
So maybe work on this. And sticking with United and Ahmad Diallo, or Ahmad Traoré, that we've just mentioned, he's been fined €50,000 for entering Italy with forced document. No surprise, I guess.
Yeah, this goes back to when he first entered Italy. We've talked about this before.
Yeah, I mean, he was 10 or 12, so it's not him directly being fined.
No, this is part of the plea bargain.
Yeah.
I mean, a crime was still committed in the sense that it was effectively a child footballer trafficking ring that brought him and Ahmad Traoré, who's at Sassuolo, took these guys to Italy, says, oh, look, they're brothers. And guess what? These guys, who are legally resident in Italy, oh, look, they happen to be their parents. And so we're just bringing them over. And except those guys aren't their parents. They have different parents. And they entered a plea bargain. They got all the paperwork in order. There's a suggestion that Diallo could actually become an Italian citizen, which he would be entitled to based on residency, but then obviously entered illegally.
Yeah.
I think that is the next step. And United fans have nothing to worry about. It's all fine.
Yeah.
Zinedine Zidane switches to a back three, plays somebody named Marvin Park out wide, and they beat Getafe 2-0. Jules?
Yeah. Marvin Park, the Tranmere Rovers legend, who was there at the academy as a youth product. Listen, we said everybody's injured. There's not many options. What I liked is that he changed the formation. He tried something different with the back three. Getafe, I'm sorry, they're not a good team. And
they're really bad this season. They're always hard on the eye.
Yeah, but
you understand why Carlos Alenia went there? I don't understand.
I guess they were the only one there for him, and he wanted to play. I don't know, but it's a win. You take it. You move on. That back three worked. Fellon Mendy and Karim Benzema scored. By the way, Varane scored 2 against Huesca. Then 2 other Frenchmen scored against Getafe.
All right.
Well, it's true. Come on, this is a French club.
You know what's funny? I was watching on the guy. I think he was Irish. Instead of calling them, saying like, oh, and the Frenchman, he'd say, and the Frenchman. Wow, this is different. Kind of like it.
Manchester City beat Swansea 3-1 in the FA Cup to make it 15 wins in a row in domestic competitions, in all competitions. Gab, that's a new record. Are you impressed?
kinds of records don't really impress
me.
Domestic. No, I'm impressed with the run Manchester City are on, with the fact that they're so good, the fact that he can make a million changes. Although Swansea,
a strong team, it was
Swansea
a strong team still,
made a bunch of changes as well,
yeah.
Because obviously they're chasing promotion. I'm impressed with what Manchester City have done. 14, 15, 16, 17. They beat Preston in 1891, 92. It's not really relevant to me. A goal from my man, Moise Kean, gives Paris Saint-Germain a 1-0 win in the French Cup. All well, Jules, or are you a little worried about Neymar?
It's all about Neymar. It's all about his injury on that sort of left groin. He left the pitch after 55 minutes or something. He's going to have scans today on Thursday when we record this. There's big fears that he might not be fit for the Barcelona clash in the Champions League on Tuesday, which, again, will be the curse of the Champions League for him in Paris. It'll be really sad, but we'll have to just wait and see.
We sure he's not just pretending?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he might not be merchant. He might just be a scare. And before there was big scares, and actually there was not much in the end. But you could also sense the anxiety from PSG right now. A late Iheanacho goal sends Leicester City past Brighton and into the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. But Gab, I want to ask you about Mike Dean, who was the referee for this game after receiving death threat at the weekend after the red card for Suchek. But he won't be taking charge of a Premier League match this weekend. He asked not to be refereeing this weekend.
Yeah, look, obviously, if you make threats against somebody's life or their family, that is a crime. They mm-hmm. should find you and put you in prison. There's no question about that. I'm not 100% clear, though, why this happens on Sunday night and he's fine to referee on Wednesday, but then he can't referee at the weekend. It doesn't change the fact that I think in a professional sphere, what he did was really bad. He did a really bad job, he and Lee Mason. And this whole thing about, oh, it's you with your criticism that leads people making death threats. No, it doesn't lead people making death threats.
Everybody
is different things. And one's criminal, and, you know, let's hope they find the bad guys.
Yeah, I agree.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Jules, I have in my hand a long, long list of Champions League and Europa League ties that have been moved to neutral venues, including, but not limited to, Leipzig and Liverpool, Atletico and Chelsea, Gladbach and City. The list goes on and on. Real Sociedad and Manchester United will be played in Turin, I guess, so Pogba doesn't get homesick. This is all necessary because of COVID restrictions and flight restrictions, but some people are complaining that, oh, but it's not fair. We have to play in neutral venues, and you guys get to play at home.
Yeah, I think it's unfair. Either you do both legs on neutral venues, but it is unfair.
Come on.
Yeah, but it is unfair. It isn't fair. What would you? It's a home tie. You can go from home to the stadium and back instead of having to travel to another country and with all the risks.
To another country?
Well, yeah. If you're Molde, you have to go from all the way to Spain, for example. It's not even Hoffenheim.
Well, first of all, if you're Molde, you're choosing to play in Spain.
It's not your call. It's not your decision.
No, but you could
have to say that. This is nothing to do with the club. It's not the club's desire or
Arsenal are choosing to play in Athens.
Arsenal cannot go and play in Benfica, so they have to play somewhere else. So they have to find another place to play.
No, but Molde are the home side, right? And they're choosing where they're playing away from home. I don't know. I Real Sociedad saying choosing to play in Turin. Like they chose to play in Turin.
Yeah, but they still had to play somewhere else than in their own stadium.
I don't know. This whole whinginess about it.
You're harsh. And also, can you explain me the logic? So Liverpool can't go to Germany, right, because of the variant. Mm-hmm. But yet Leipzig will come to Liverpool. We come to England, where there's far more people and far more risk to get the variant. In England, and then go back to Germany.
Right.
But yeah, Liverpool cannot go to Germany. I mean, that doesn't even make any sense.
Let's be very clear on this. These are government rules. These are local restrictions. These are made by scientists and politicians. We're neither. I agree with you. It seems a little bit
odd.
This
one is the crazy one, because you don't want 40 people from Liverpool.
This is not something you can blame UEFA for.
Yeah, but you don't want 40 people coming from Liverpool to Leipzig. And yet Leipzig will go to Liverpool, where there's millions of people. I mean,
yeah. It makes zero sense. It makes zero sense.
Atalanta beat Napoli 3-1 in the Coppa d'Italia semi-final second leg and are through to the final where they will play Juventus. Gab, that's more trouble for Rino Gattuso, right?
Yeah, look, I'm going to give him a pass again because he had Koulibaly and Manolas out, whatever, and Atalanta are a better side. This wasn't good. He's at loggerheads with the club. It's crazy. They still have a game in hand. They've got some big games coming up. They could go back to third, but it's weird. I get a bad vibe about this
because this
is exactly the situation they were in a year ago with De Laurentiis as well and Ancelotti. And I'm like, why can't you just make it work? Why can't you be run as a normal club?
Why don't you be normal?
Jules, now a deal has been reached over French domestic TV rights after Mediapro pulled out. This is relevant because it's been very damaging to the finances of a lot of clubs.
Yeah, you're right. The new deal is worth €650 million for the season from Canal Plus, whereas the old one with Mediapro was over €1 billion. So you can just imagine already without the pandemic and the loss of earnings there.
It's about a third less in terms of what they were expecting.
Exactly. And Mediapro just packed up after 6 months saying they could not pay any more the installments to the league and to the clubs for what they signed for, pretty much. So they had to find another solution, which Canal Plus came. But Canal Plus obviously got a bargain because they were in a very strong position. It was an absolute mess. It was very difficult. Let's just hope that club can survive and add enough cash reserves, add enough in the bank, or we'll get some help from the government, which they're asking for again, to be able to make it until the end of the season. Then in the summer you'll have a new bids for the league TV rights domestically, and then let's hope that they can get a bit more money than the 650 that they just got.
And we should also point out that in France this is a bigger issue because of course the league shut down back in March when the first restrictions came in, and so they didn't get to play, and so presumably they have to give that TV money back and on top of that, relative to a lot of other countries, the box office or game day receipts in France are a bigger percentage of club revenue than they are for many teams in Italy and Spain, for example.
Gazzetta dello Sport are reporting that Milan are ready to offer Gigio Donnarumma a 5-year deal worth around €14 million a year gross, or around £250,000 a week. He's out of contract in the summer, of course, but he only wants a 2-year extension, not 5 years. What does make sense to you the most?
Well, I tell you what makes sense from Mino Raiola's perspective,
which is
5 years. No. That's a 2-year extension. Look, this is actually a very small salary bump over what he's earning now. You can make the point that he's earning far too much because he was given far too big a deal before and far too short a deal and far too stupid a deal.
Yeah.
That was a previous Milan ownership. Mina and I think are saying, look, you know, there's pressures, there's pandemics, there's debts, there's losses. You already are one of the highest paid goalkeepers in the world. We can't push the boat out that much further. But I think Mino's in a really strong position. Yeah. He says, all right, you don't want to give me a big bump? Then we either do one of two things. Either we put in a release clause, which I think might be ultimately how this happens, or you should just sign for 2 years and then we can go and discuss contracts again 12 months from now.
Could they do a middle ground in 3 years and maybe that buys a bit more time for everyone?
Buys more time for Mino?
You know what I dreamt of the other day? I promise you it's a real dream.
You dreamt of Mino Raiola?
No, that Donnarumma was signing for Inter Milan on a free this summer because Handanovic is old now, and as much as we like him, it's time for him to move out of the way, and then Gigio Donnarumma becomes the Inter Milan goalkeeper.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. Not the way Inter's finances are right now. Ibrahima Konate is probably the second best French central defender of African descent at Leipzig. But he's getting plenty of buzz among Premier League teams and has been linked to Arsenal, United, Chelsea, the usual suspects. Jules, when I saw this story, I'm like, okay, agent, talking, contract, blah, 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 everybody ripping off everybody else. In any case, we're Upamecano guys, right?
Yeah, although Konaté
being,
being from Paris, born and bred, he's got a special place in my heart more than Diop Upamecano, who's not.
Where's he from? Where's Upamecano from?
He's from Évreux, which is a little bit south, but doesn't really count as Paris. So I can't really, I can't really, you know, it's not one of ours really, technically. And you're right, he's going to go to Bayern Munich, and there's no way, I think, even
it's not done, but it's it's sneaky Bayern thing where like they sign up people before
that. 42 million euro release clause on Upamecano's contract, which I think is a bargain for him. And I don't think Leipzig will let both go at the same time, the same summer, even with Simakon coming from Strasbourg, who's another very young, promising French centre-back.
And they signed another guy from Croatia, from Zagreb, I'm blanking on, in addition to Simakon.
Yes,
everybody loves Simakon, but the other guy...
Yeah, Simakon is great too.
Yeah, the other guy, some other... So, yeah,
they're preparing, obviously. Yeah. That's what they do. That's what they're so good at, is that they always have the next step once someone leaves and someone goes.
Konaté
is really strong. A few people have said to me that he's actually better than Upamecano. And if he had had the injuries that he had bad injuries already, although he's still very young, he would have got to a better level maybe than Dayot. So we'll have to see. But they're both tremendous players.
I got to say, this business that happens in Germany, where obviously people sign pre-contracts and agree to move to other clubs and whatever, right?
Yeah.
But where it's so out in the open, whether it's players, like with Upamecano, we saw it in the past with Lewandowski, with Neuer, all the way back to Jupp Heynckes when he was the Bayer Leverkusen coach. And now with Marco Rose and Gladbach, where they're all like, well, 99%, 98%, you know, like, it doesn't sit well. You have Gladbach competing with Dortmund for a spot in the Champions League, and the guy who's the Gladbach manager, you know, is supposedly going to be the Dortmund manager next year. Like,
that's crazy.
Hello? Appearance of? I guess they're so trusting in Germany that, you know, but I tell you what, this would never fly in Italy.
No, definitely not. Jerome Boateng won't be playing in the Club World Cup final when Bayern play Tigres in a few hours from when we're recording this on Thursday evening, after his former girlfriend, with whom he split just a couple of weeks ago, was found dead in Berlin. He has asked the club permission to fly back to Germany, which he did. Gab, our thoughts, of course, for the family and her loved ones, and to Jerome Boateng as well.
Yeah, there's not much else that you can add here. You know, she was a mother of a six-year-old. It was a bit of a public split, and there were a lot of nasty things flying around in the media and on social media. It's just a very, very sad story, and our thoughts, you know, go to her loved ones and the people who are left over. If Philippe Coutinho makes another 7 appearances for Barcelona this season, they owe Liverpool another 5 million euros. Jules, given their financial state, even if he does come back, it's best if they just don't play him, right?
I'm not even sure they've got 5 million to give to Liverpool anyway. Or maybe they can pay them with, like, I don't know, pens or cones, you know, like bibs. Maybe, I don't know, but...
Leftover Lionel Messi merchandise?
That would be good. Mugs and little teddy bears and things like that. I don't know. I think I'm always a bit skeptical about, oh, we can't play him because there's a bonus that will kick in or not. But maybe you're right. Maybe in the situation they are, maybe considering how very little he's offering, even when he's fit and playing, maybe that's a decision they can take.
And Liverpool can then take that money and give it to Fulham to pay for Harvey Elliott's tribunal.
Yeah, because I think they're going to... This one was a very interesting one as well. Under the post-Brexit rules, the new rules that have kicked in for managers, you need to have worked in a top league for the past 2 years or coached a top 50 nations national team for the past 5 years if you want a job in England. So the Daily Mail said that it would have ruled out Marcelo Bielsa and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer coming to the Premier League. Gab, your thoughts?
So a couple of things on this. First of all, short answer is no, it wouldn't have, because there's still an appeal system.
Yeah.
We've covered some of this before.
Case by case, by the way.
It's case by case. But yeah, but I'm sorry. Oh, Manchester United come in and say, hey, FA, tribunal, look, I'm responsible for what, 20% of your income, if not more? I want Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Yeah.
He's already managing the freaking Premier League. I want to bring him in. And are you really going to say no to me?
As if they're going to say, uh-uh.
So it's stupid. So they have an appeal system where I think in the end, everything's going to be waved through.
Yeah.
But I also have an issue with this, because they made these rules, and there's rules on players as well, which are filled with a million loopholes, just to be seen to be doing something. Oh, yes, let's promote English talent.
But what do you think is that's just to promote English talent? So you promote English coaches instead of Marcelo Bielsa?
But that's the idea. But it's,
right.
Because, of course, I don't even have a problem with you, but you're so stupid about it, because then you may have a million loopholes. The clubs are going to decide. The Premier League is going to decide. The Premier League is what holds football up in this country and what holds up the FA. And it's just the sheer hypocrisy of this, which frankly totally bugs me about this. And the idea that, you know, all of a sudden we're gonna have this shift in rules, we're gonna have these arbitrary things. Oh, look, you know, you've gone and you were the manager of Slovakia for 5 years, so you're okay, but hey, you're only Marcelo Bielsa, so you're not okay.
You're not okay.
Come on, man. Raymond Domenech is in the news again, Jules. I can't wait.
Raymond Domenech.
Raymond Domenech.
46 days, 8 games, 0 win. I mean, we warned everyone. We said to them, why? Why would you do that to your club?
He's a very competent theater critic, apparently.
Yaya Touré has joined the coaching staff of Olympique Donetsk, which is the third team from Donetsk after Shakhtar and Metalurgs. Gab, it's great that he's getting this kind of opportunity there.
At Olympique Donetsk.
Seventh in the league. It's not too bad.
I don't know the ins and outs. I think, you know, we talk a lot about diversity, great coaching staff, great players. Obviously, his brother, Kolo Touré, is a prominent, very successful assistant coach. I mean, obviously, just because they're brothers doesn't mean that they're both going to be good at it. I would have thought somebody of his stature could have gotten a shot someplace closer to home. That's all I'm saying. Look, I know he's lived in Donetsk before. He started, I think, at Metalurg.
He did play two seasons there, yeah.
Donetsk. So maybe he... Have you been to Donetsk?
Yeah, I have.
So we've both been there. I don't know. Maybe he likes to see... I don't know. Maybe he likes Ukrainian food. But it's good for him. We wish him well.
Yeah, of course. This is a learning
experience.
Yeah.
I just would have thought, you know, maybe you could have learned a little bit. And I'd also hate it if this was some kind of PR thing, because does he speak Russian or Ukrainian?
I believe not.
Yeah, that's another kind of weird thing. Like, sure. I don't know.
But let's hope for him.
Good luck to Yaya.
Yeah, good luck.
He's one of the good guys.
It is.
That brings us to an end. Jules, you're going to be back on Monday. I won't be here because guess what? I'm going on holiday. So long, suckers.
Yeah, I hope.
Until then. Well, not really going anywhere. You can't go anywhere. We're in lockdown.
No, exactly.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.